All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to really kind of get into a case that I think is super important, especially for understanding property law, but even beyond that, just the way that we think about private property and the environment. And it's a case called Marks v. Whitney. And I think especially for law students, this is it's not just some old case, right? This is something that, this is a case that still has so much relevance today.
Absolutely. And it really lays the groundwork for how we deal with, you know, these huge issues we're facing now with climate change and, you know, protecting our coasts.
Yeah, exactly. So this case, Marks v. Whitney, it was decided way back in 1971 by the California Supreme Court. And I think it really, it kind of like represents this ongoing debate, right? This ongoing struggle in environmental law about how do we balance, on the one hand, these rights that people have to their private property, but on the other hand, the, you know, this kind of broader public interest in making sure that we're protecting our shared natural resources.
Right. It's really a classic case in terms of like, how do we balance those sometimes competing interests? And it all started, with a pretty specific dispute over a piece of land right on Tamales Bay in California.
Yeah. Beautiful area.
Yeah.
So, let's set the stage a little bit. So we've got two main characters in this legal drama. We've got Larry H. Marks Jr., who owned a section of tidelands on Tamales Bay. And, you know, maybe we should just pause for a second and define what tidelands actually are, because I think that's pretty key to understanding this whole case. So we're talking about essentially that area of land that lies between the high and low tide lines. So it's that area that's kind of submerged during high tide, but then exposed during low tide.
Yeah.
And historically, a lot of these tide land areas were often considered public spaces.
Right. It's not always clear who owns them or who has the right to use them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in this case, Marks, he actually acquired this piece of tide land through an 1874 patent, which is basically a legal document that was granted under a state law from 1868.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on paper, this was his private property.
Right. He had the deed to it.
Yeah. But it was in this, in this area that, as we'll see, has this kind of huge public interest attached to it.
Right. And to make things even more interesting, right next to Marx's tidelands was this upland property owned by another guy, Peter D. Whitney. So Whitney's land was kind of like the higher ground that bordered the tidelands.
Right. So he's the upland owner.
Exactly. And, you know, because his land touched the water, he had something called littoral rights. So littoral rights are basically the rights that waterfront property owners have.
Yeah. So what kind of rights are we talking about?
Well, they typically include things like, the right to access the water, the right to use the water, you know, things like building a dock or a wharf, you know, things like that. So you can already see how things might get a little complicated, right?
Yeah.
You've got Marks, who owns the tidelands, but then Whitney, right next to him, who has these littoral rights. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, where does one person's right end and the other person's begin?
Right. And I mean, it's even more complex than that, because it's not just about Marks and Whitney, right? It's about this bigger question of what are the public's rights when it comes to these tidelands, to these coastal areas? So, you know, what was Marks actually planning to do with this land?
Well, his plan was basically to fill it in and develop it, you know, kind of your classic waterfront development situation, you know, maybe put up some structures, alter the natural contours of the bay.
Right. And Whitney, as you can imagine, Whitney was not too happy about this.
Yeah, not at all.
I mean, he filed a lawsuit to try to stop this from happening.
Yeah.
And his objections, you know, they weren't just about his own personal littoral rights. He wasn't just thinking about, this is going to block my view, or this is going to, you know, make it harder for me to get to the water. He was also like really concerned about the public's access to these tidelands and the potential for, you know, ecological damage.
Yeah. So he was really kind of taking a stand on behalf of, you know, the broader public interest in protecting these areas.
Exactly. And so that's really what makes this case so significant. It wasn't just, you know, a squabble between two neighbors. It was this, it brought up this much bigger question of, you know, who owns the coast, essentially, right? Who gets to decide what happens to these really valuable and ecologically sensitive areas?
Right. And can private property rights trump, you know, those broader public interests?
Absolutely. So, you know, this case, it starts off as this, kind of a local dispute, but eventually makes its way all the way up to the California Supreme Court.
Uh-huh.
And, it's interesting to kind of trace how that happened. So initially the case landed in trial court. And it seems like, you know, at first the trial court was really focused on, you know, just kind of this very straightforward boundary dispute, right? Like, okay, where's the line between Mark's property and Whitney's property?
Yeah, kind of a typical real estate squabble, you might think.
Right. But Whitney, you know, he's bringing up this this other really important legal concept. He's arguing that even though Marx has this private patent, these tide lands are still subject to what's called the public trust doctrine.
Right, which is a huge deal in environmental law.
Yeah, so maybe we should explain that a little bit too. So the public trust doctrine, it's basically this idea that you know, the government, the state, hold certain resources in trust for the benefit of all the people. And this includes things like, you know, navigable waters, the land beneath those waters, you know, the things that are really essential for public use and enjoyment. And so Whitney's argument was that these tide lands, even though they're privately owned, they still fall under this public trust doctrine.
Exactly. And it's based on this idea that, some things are just too important to be owned outright by any one person. They need to be protected for the benefit of everyone.
Right. So what did the trial court do with this argument?
Well, they basically they dismissed it.
Right.
They said, look, this public trust doctrine, that's really an issue for the state to deal with, not for a private individual like Whitney.
So they're saying he doesn't have standing.
Right. They said he doesn't have the legal standing to bring this claim. But they did give him a little something. They said, okay, we recognize that you need to be able to get to the water, right?
Wrong.
So they granted him what's called a prescriptive easement.
Okay, what's a prescriptive easement?
So an easement is basically a legal right to use someone else's property for a specific purpose.
Okay.
And a prescriptive easement is one that's created through ongoing use. So if you've been using someone else's property for a certain purpose for a long enough time, you can actually acquire a legal right to continue using it. So in this case, the court said, okay, Whitney, you've been using this path or this area to get to the water for a while. So we're going to give you a prescriptive easement to keep doing that.
Okay.
But it was pretty limited. They only gave him an easement for a 7-foot-wide wharf.
7 feet.
Yeah, barely enough space to walk down.
Wow. So I guess Whitney wasn't too happy about that either.
No, I don't think so.
But the story doesn't end there, right? Because, you know, this case, as we said, it goes all the way up to the California Supreme Court.
Right. And the Supreme Court had a very different perspective on this whole standing issue.
Yeah, so that's really where things get interesting. So,
Yeesh.
what did the Supreme Court say about Whitney's right to bring this public trust claim?
Well, they basically overturned the trial court's decision and said, yes, Whitney does have standing to bring this claim.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a huge deal. They recognized that individuals, people like Whitney who have a genuine stake in these issues, they should have the legal right to raise these public trust concerns in court.
So this means that it's not just up to the state to enforce the public trust doctrine. It's like ordinary citizens can also take action.
Exactly. And this was a really important moment for environmental law because it really empowered citizens to act as kind of watchdogs, right? To make sure that the state is fulfilling its duty to protect these resources for the public.
Yeah, that's huge. So, you know, that's the first big legal question that the court tackled. But there were actually four key legal issues that they had to address in this case. And the second one was this question of, you know, are privately owned tide lands, like the ones that Marx had the patent for,
Right.
are they still subject to this public trust doctrine?
Right. I mean, that seems kind of counterintuitive, right? If you own something, shouldn't you have the right to do whatever you want with it?
Exactly. But the court, you know, they kind of went against that traditional understanding of property rights.
Yeah, they said, nope, even if you have a deed that says you own the tide lands, you're still subject to the public trust. And the reasoning was that, the state, even when it grants private title to these tide lands, it can't completely abandon its role as the trustee protecting the public's interest.
Oh, I see. So it's like, you know, even if you buy a piece of land, there is still some limitations on what you can do with it,
Yeah.
especially when it comes to these, you know, these areas that are so important for the environment and for public access.
Right. It's like there's this underlying public trust easement that always exists, regardless of who owns the property.
Gotcha. So the third legal issue that the court addressed was the scope of the public trust doctrine itself. Like, what exactly does it cover? I mean, we've talked about, you know, things like navigation and fishing, but the court They actually broadened that understanding quite a bit, right?
Yeah, they really expanded it. So traditionally, you know, we think of the public trust doctrine as being about things like, you know, commerce, navigation, fishing, you know, kind of those traditional uses of waterways.
Right.
But in Marks v. Whitney, the California Supreme Court said, you know, it's more than that. It's also about ecology. It's about recreation. It's about the importance of open space.
So they're saying the public has an interest in these areas, even if they're not, you know, actively using them for commerce or transportation.
Exactly. And they specifically said that, you know, preservation of tidelands in their natural state, that is now a recognized and protected public use under the public trust doctrine.
So they're really emphasizing the ecological value of these areas.
Absolutely. And this was a really forward-thinking aspect of the decision because, you know, back in 1971, environmental protection wasn't as much of a, you know, a mainstream concern as it is today.
Right.
But the court was really ahead of its time in recognizing the importance of preserving these areas for, you know, their ecological value, for scientific research, for wildlife habitat, you know, all of those things.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's something that's even more relevant today, right? As we're dealing with climate change and, you know, the loss of biodiversity and all these, you know, all these really pressing environmental issues.
Absolutely. So the fourth and final legal issue that the court addressed was, you know, Whitney's littoral rights. Remember, the trial court had given him that very narrow easement, you know, just 7 feet for a wharf.
Yeah, that seemed pretty restrictive.
The Supreme Court agreed. They said, look, the trial court didn't really take into account the full extent of Whitney's rights as an upland owner to have, you know, reasonable access to the water.
Right.
So they basically sent that part of the decision back down to the trial court and said, you need to reconsider this. You need to think more broadly about what constitutes reasonable access for a waterfront property owner in this situation.
Okay. So that's, you know, we've kind of laid out the four big legal issues that the court had to grapple with. And now I think it's really interesting to kind of delve into, well, what was the reasoning behind all this, right? Like what were the kind of the big ideas and principles that were guiding the justices as they made this decision?
Right. I mean, they didn't just, you know, pull these decisions out of thin air.
Right.
So one of the key things that they emphasized was, you know, this idea that preservation of tidelands in their natural state, that is a legitimate and protected public use.
Right, we talked about that.
Right. And this really highlights that expanded scope of the public trust doctrine that we were just discussing. They're saying, look, it's not just about, you know, building docks and wharves and shipping goods. It's also about protecting the environment. And they also emphasize that the state's authority over these tidelands, you know, acting as trustee for the public, that authority is absolute.
Wow, absolute. That's strong language.
It is. And it really underscores, you know, how seriously they took this public trust responsibility. They're saying, look, the state has a fundamental duty to protect these resources for the public, even when private ownership is involved.
Right. So the private property rights, they're not unlimited.
Exactly.
They have to be balanced against this public trust.
Right. And, you know, the court didn't really lay out a specific test, you know, a step-by-step formula for determining, you know, exactly how to balance those
Right.
interests. But they did point to some key factors that should be considered.
Okay, like what?
Well, one of the things they emphasized was the flexible and evolving nature of public trust purposes. You know, what's considered to be in the public interest, that's not a static thing.
Right.
It changes over time. So, you know, the public trust doctrine has to be adaptable enough to meet those changing needs and values.
Right. So it's like a living document almost.
Exactly. And they also emphasize, again, this principle that private ownership of tidelands is always subordinate to the public trust easement.
Right. So that keeps coming up.
Yeah, it's a really key point. And finally, they emphasize the need for courts to carefully weigh these competing interests, right? The private property rights versus the public's rights under the trust.
Yeah.
And you know, they use these legal terms. They call it jus privatum, which is basically the private right, versus jus publicum, which is the public right. Okay. And they're saying, look, you got to balance those two things.
Right. So, you know, it's not an easy case to decide. There's a lot of nuance there. But you know, I think it's really important to kind of step back and think about, you know, what was the lasting impact of this case? Like, why does it still matter today?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is that it really empowered ordinary citizens to bring lawsuits to protect the environment.
Right.
By giving standing to individuals like Whitney, the court created a mechanism for public oversight and enforcement of the public trust doctrine.
Right. So it's not just the government's job anymore.
Exactly. And that's had a huge ripple effect, you know, in California and beyond. And I think perhaps even more importantly, Marx v. Whitney established this legal precedent for addressing a lot of the environmental challenges that we're facing today, especially when it comes to, you know, climate change and sea level rise.
Yeah.
Because the court explicitly said that, you know, protecting the ecological health of tidelands, that's part of the public trust.
Mm.
So that gives us a legal framework for, you know, protecting those areas from things like, you know, coastal development or pollution or other harmful activities.
Yeah, so this is a case that could have a really direct impact on how we deal with, you know, climate change adaptation and coastal management in the future.
Absolutely. And it raises a really important question for, you know, anybody who's thinking about buying property on the coast, especially if it includes tidelands.
Which
even if you own the land, could the public still have rights to access it or, you know, prevent certain types of development?
And the answer, according to Marx v. Whitney,
is yes.
Yeah.
Because the state's duty as trustee for the public interest, that comes first. That takes precedence over private development rights.
Right. So it's a really important case for, you know, anybody who's interested in property law, environmental law, you know, really any area of law that touches on the relationship between private property and the public good. So I think it's worth kind of summarizing what we've learned from this deep dive into Marx v. Whitney. You know, the case established that privately owned tidelands in California, they're still subject to this public trust doctrine. It broadened the definition of that public trust to include, you know, ecological and recreational values, not just those traditional uses. And it also said that private citizens have the right to sue to enforce those public trust obligations.
Exactly. And I think, you know, for all the law students out there who are listening, this case is a great example of how, you know, the law evolves to reflect changing societal values. You know, this is an older case, but it still has so much relevance today because it really speaks to these fundamental questions about how we balance private property rights with the need to protect the environment.
Right. And I mean, that tension is only going to become more acute as we, you know, as we grapple with these, you know, increasingly challenging environmental issues.
Right. And that's something I would, you know, I would encourage you to think about, you know, as you continue your legal studies, as you go out into the world and, you know, maybe even practice environmental law or property law or whatever area you end up in, you know, keep this case in mind and think about, you know, how can we use the law to protect the environment, to balance those competing interests, and to ensure that, you know, our natural resources are protected for future generations.
Yeah. So there you have it, Marx v. Whitney, a case that continues to shape how we think about the relationship between private property and the environment.
A real landmark case. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
And we'll see you next time.